You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Nick Fusaro. Nick, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, thank you, Brainerd, for having me. Appreciate it.
Nick, we're talking about your show, of course, at Blade Study, Foreman, and I'm excited to get into the show and the materials you're using. But to maybe just to step back a little bit, the title of the show, Foreman, is about the process, right, or direction of the show, because Foreman almost sounds like we're talking a kind of theatrical approach, the person who's overseeing the execution of the work. Can you tell me about that title?
Sure. Yeah, you're pretty spot on there. It is meant to be this overseer. The title of the show, it's also the title of the piece that's kind of centrally located on the back wall there. And Blade Study has this great storefront gallery, so you can see through to the storefront, which I set up another piece that we can talk about. You see through that piece and then to the back panel. It's also titled Foreman. And on that piece there, there's this kind of silhouette cutout of a jester, of a clown, and he's meant to be the foreman kind of overseeing the site. And this idea of the foreman has to do with site and location and someone who kind of acts as an executor, right? Someone who maybe is somewhat separated from the creative process, but gets these plans and executes them, and then has you know, a level how can I put it, production that's involved in his work. But then I've kind of translated that to the work in the show.
So let's talk about the work in the show. There's as you're saying, two works that you were just talking about. One is called Foreman. That you're looking through, at least from the front, another work to see. So let's talk about that one. The one in the front that you're looking through is the one through the clumsy hole. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. And there's a number of kind of houses that dot the walls in the show. And then this one, the one through the clumsy hole, is towards the front there. And if you're looking at an image of it, or if you're looking at the work, you could see there's kind of this opening towards the front and the opening towards the back. And the thing that's the unifying thing with all the houses is there's no opening, so there's no doors or entrances. And this one is kind of situated where, like, the second floor or an attic might be, so it's not really a passageway, but nonetheless you can look through it, so it acts kind of as this aperture. And it's a clumsy hole because it's, you know, kind of clumsily made. I kind of try to work in a more like casual fashion with these as far as like construction materials go. And that talks to their scale as well and their kind of humble materials. But anyway, that's why it's situated towards the front. We wanted to use that front area as a way to look through, but also to let light through, and then you can see through that towards the rest of the show. And we elevated it on a pedestal so you could see the foreman in particular if you were to look through there. And if you weren't to look through, you can still, you know, enjoy the rest of the work regardless.
So let's talk about foreman. You're looking through that. I mean, that takes a central stage, really, because of what you just said, that kind of vignette looking through, and then we see foreman. Foreman is... it's one of the more abstract works in the show. I mean, there's a lot that's quite abstract. There is this figurative image in there, like you said, of the clown. But let's talk about this a little bit, because it's a very unusual materials. You've got, you know, construction materials like roofing paint and felt, but also other things going on here, right? Like safety pins that are not really part of construction materials.
Yeah, I think you've kind of nailed it there. The safety pin, and I guess you could say the paper, and maybe there's one patch of felt on that panel there, are the only non-construction related materials, but everything else has this real industrial quality to it. And, you know, I'm an object maker, like, first and foremost, and these are the things that I'm interested in, and that comes with a lot of materiality and material manipulation. So these panels that you would be looking at are all plywood panels that I make in my studio with, you know, poplar backing, and then I'll wax them so they have this you know, kind of seal on them, and then I use a spray adhesive to put these collaged elements on top, and then there's roofing nails to finish most of the pieces. And these two panels in the show are actually the only two in this series that I've been working on for maybe a year, year and a half, that have any kind of figuration in them. And I don't work figuratively, so it was kind of a departure for me, but I wanted to use this character to really drive home the idea of the foreman as someone that has this kind of like choreographic influence on, again, a site or a place, and usually a place of production, right, of building and of construction. And in this case, it's transposed to be the art gallery. And I've grown up around these kind of languages. My father's in construction, and my grandfather, who I'm named after, was a mason. So I grew up with these kind of like material languages, and they've always been familiar to me, and I wanted to see how I could translate them into an art making process.
And those languages that you grew up with, are those ones that you've also experienced? Have you worked under a foreman or been a foreman or used these materials outside of art making in terms of framing or carpentry or house building, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, growing up in the summers, I always worked for my dad on construction sites in New Jersey, and then moved to New York for undergraduate, and then have been here ever since. But I've been working in shops, college shops. I'm in a wood shop now, and so yeah, I have this kind of access, but also more importantly, proximity to it, which helps me hone. At least I'm trying to hone these kind of ideas or ways of working that might have some kind of like communicative aspect to it in the way that you handle them and you treat them either with preciousness or non-preciousness, which is what I was trying to do with this show in particular. And the aluminum. The aluminum's kind of the through line through the last couple bodies of work.
So let's talk about aluminum, because that's another unusual material, right? Used for flashing. I've also been involved in framing to some degree, so I have some sense of that knowledge, which you know, seems to me carries this particular sense of using materials, but also it's there's so much more, right? You're building homes. And the homes that are occurring throughout this are in part about that, right? So maybe before we talk about aluminum and that, there's this recurring theme of home, isn't it? Not just materials, or not that that's just, but then there's these actual kind of buildings in there which seem like a home or someone's home in its entirety.
Yeah, I like what you say about someone's home, because I didn't want them to be too specific to me or to anyone in general. I wanted them to kind of be this stand-in for the home. And I have this kind of pseudo rule that sometimes I adhere to, and depends on the size of the piece, where I try to make them in a day or two, the homes in particular. The other works, you know, take as long as they need, but to kind of have this how can I put it, this familiarity or this casualness of being at home and this comfort. So I think the way that I make them, hopefully, or I'm hoping that they translate into this kind of like, not necessarily quickness or fastness, but maybe like a pace that is more, you know, laid back or welcoming. And that's where the building material also, like the images on the panels are meant to, or at least they're inspired by blueprints and this idea, like similar to a foreman, an architect is a mark maker, right? And he's organizing space. And I'm, as a sculptor, I'm interested in space and organization of space. And so they kind of, to me, are meant to mimic an aerial view of a blueprint. And that has to do with the home and building, like you said, and this kind of comfort that I associate it with.
Well, the blueprint is also about, I mean, the home is the comfort for you or someone else, but the blueprint is also the plan. It's sort of like God's view or something. I don't know what if there's another way to put that, but it's kind of an omniscient view, right? You're looking down on something that's a potential and possibly huge, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there's this kind of like, there's this gap between the, like you said, this maybe this higher being or something like that, that has this plan, and that we're not maybe aware of. So I think of that with the architect, like the translation between the architect and his plans, or a draftsman or a craftsman and their plans, and then the finished thing that we experience. That gap there is kind of, or that like interstice is kind of the place where I hope these panels exist, right? They're it is image making, of course, but yeah, it's kind of this space in between, I guess, is what I'm hoping for. Yeah.
And to talk about materials, there's a lot being used here that, of course, are construction materials. But you said this recent body of work was making use of aluminum, right? Which is peculiar to work with, right? It's used for flashing, roofing, right? Can you tell me a little bit about aluminum and why that? Because that, again, has a special kind of quality to it, right? In terms of working with it.
Sure. Yeah, this is the aluminum in this show is all a brushable aluminum. So, like you said, it's close, similar to flashing. It's this industrial material that, if you've ever been on a rooftop, you know, in New York City or anywhere else really that has kind of like an industrial flat rooftop, the chances are it's coated in either this kind of black tar-like material or this material that I'm using. So it's a brushable aluminum that is viscous and oil-based, but it has actual, you know, fibrous aluminum in it. And I'd been using aluminum for a few years as this low form of a semi-precious material. So I worked with it as a foil base first, just, you know, bought from the supermarket, and then was condensing that and compressing it. And then for this show, I thought, well, how can I get maybe even a lower form, a less precious material, and see if I can transform that somehow. So I went to you know, just a construction supply store, and then this material is fairly cheap, but it's super workable, which is great. So I'll are great for me at least. I'll lay out these sheets on my studio roof, which happens to be coated with this same material, so I can be free and loose with the way that I apply it, and I try to avoid, you know, conscious brush strokes as much as I can. So there's a level of chance that happens there because I'm coating anywhere from maybe 50 to 100 sheets at a time, and then all of the mark making is kind of random, or at least as random as I can make it.
Wait a minute, tell me a little bit more about it. You're coating 50 to 100 sheets at a time, and then you're using those as collage elements, you're rearranging them. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, exactly. So once that cures, then you know, a few days I'll let it cure, and then I'll bring it back to the studio, back downstairs into my studio, and then I have these panels that are waiting, and then I'll be arranging them. So then there's more conscious, you know, choices of kind of intuitive layouts of space, essentially. That's where the blueprint kind of comes back in. And I try to, or I'm always leaving some parts of the plywood exposed, so there's this underlayment. There's still this nod to how can I say it? Like, well, construction processes, essentially.
Well, and there's also other elements in the show, like the nodules, right? These are older than some of the work in the show, but also a completely different type of material than the rest. That's more of a sculpting material. I suppose it's all sculpting material, you could say, but these are primarily polyester resin, right, over a foam core. Is that what's happening there?
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to, well, we needed some things for the floor, just kind of simply, and I had been working on these. I wasn't sure if they'd be like kind of resolved in time for the show, but they're based on, you know, I'm always wondering how much to tell the viewer and how much to withhold, but they're based on this kind of odd object. I'm an object collector as well, so I'm always going to these kind of flea markets and antique fairs and stuff, and I found this object that I couldn't identify, and it was this antique ear doctor's tool. So all of these, I call them nodules, but they're really ballooned up in scale, and they're something that a doctor would have, you know, removed and then used to measure one's ear canal. But I just thought they were these super strange, kind of whimsical pieces or objects rather. So then I blew them up, you know, 100 times scale or something like that, and then made them in in there's a just a foam armature, so I'm cutting those on the bandsaw and then skim coating them in a few different types of resin. So the coloration there is the batch mixing of the resin. So I want to let the again let the material kind of come through as it decides based on the way it's being made.
Yeah, that's such an interesting process, and these objects in the end look almost like ancient objects, right? It almost looks like alabaster, or I don't know if that's how you're thinking, but that's how they begin to look to me, like some kind of ancient vessels.
Sure. Some people visiting the show mentioned vessels, vases, vases, like or things that might just have like a kind of a stoic monumentality to them, because of their like verticality and individuality. But then you get them in a group, and they hopefully they become kind of something else. But that, yeah, that material manipulation is all about refinement, and hopefully there's. Most some people thought they were glass, a lot of ceramic assumptions, but this previous show I had 2 years ago with blade study in the same space, I learned how to, or I taught myself how to Venetian plaster, and that was a similar process of trying to take this kind of maybe I don't know high end or antiquated process and seeing if you can gussy it up a little bit and see what happens.
Yeah, that's really just fascinating. And the work in this show is, of course, all of a piece. And as you were saying, it also relates to this kind of collecting that you do, right? You're an object collector. That's part of what's happening here too, right? Can you tell me a little bit about just the object collection that you do? Is it and how that kind of feeds into this? I mean, obviously the nodules are that. But does it also enter into the other work as well?
Sure, yeah. Well, they enter into the work, I guess, in it's a good question. In the kind of variation that I try to introduce into the work. For example, like the one through the clumsy hole, that sculpture in the front. If you look closely, there's these kind of railroad ties or railroad spikes that hold up these chestnuts that are then dipped in aluminum, and they kind of act as weather vanes. Or spikes or something like that. But that railroad tie, that spike is something that has to do with Americana, with folk art, with, found object, because it's something that is so different from the material that I'm using, which is this very like, straight and structured and perpendicular wood and plywood and stuff like that. So it adds a level of hopefully like I don't know. It's just a different type of approach, and I think these found objects do that for me. They help me get me out of this mode that a foreman might be in, this mode of just execution. Like, you see the nail and you hit it because there's this process that's involved. So it adds a level of for me at least in the process, it adds a level of a variation.
I like that makes sense. I like that, and yeah, I really love the materials in this show. And of course, for listeners, there's links here, so you can see more and learn more and reach out to the gallery. I want to ask you one more question before we go a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
Right now what am I reading right now? I recently picked up a collection by Kelly Jones, collection of, well, she's the editor who collected the essays on David Hammons that I got from the Whitney bookstore. And that's been helpful with, found object and collections and all that. And I'm also about halfway through Rachel Kushner's book, The Flamethrowers, from a few years ago, which is this art historical fictional representation of an artist in the 60s who goes out west and is making land art. Yeah.
The David Hammond's book also sounds fascinating. I mean, they both do. I haven't read The Flamethrowers, but David Hammond's really holds a special place among artists and sculptors, doesn't he? There's something about him that's like sort of our Joseph Beuys or something like that. I'm never quite clear why David Hammond's is so such an outsized figure, but he is, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think for me, it's just the seeming ease that he works with, which of course it's, it can't be that easy, right? But it's this translation or transformation of the most common objects into something that just seems unbelievable, and these combinations of things. And I think it really comes with slowing down and analyzing and looking and realizing that there's so many built things in the world that just by choosing them. I mean, this isn't profound, but just by choosing them and seeing what kind of relations happen when you put one next to the other, I think he's kind of the master at that.
Thanks so much for sharing that. I certainly agree, and I want to thank you for talking with me today. I appreciate your time and your work. And again, for listeners, please follow the links and learn more. Reach out. Thanks again, Nick.
Yeah, thank you, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.